Welcome to WJR's Internet Advisor Podcast. Catch the live show weekends on News Talk 760 WJR and online at InternetAdvisor.net. Now, here are your hosts.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Welcome aboard the Internet Advisor. It's funny. Gary walked in the studio and said, it's a breathtaking show, meaning he's still catching his.
There was construction on 94 coming in, so yes, it was just in time.
I like that idea, breathtaking show. Gary Baker, of course, the Internet Advisor. Eddie Rudell, good to see you here.
Always great, Foster.
Cal Carson is off on a little vacation or trip, actually, and Shane Hamlin's with us this week. How are you doing,
I'm
Shane?
Back again. I have my Red Bull and my Mountain Dew.
Oh, my.
So
boy.
He's loaded.
I'm ready.
Folks,
loaded.
Any tech question can be answered today. On the power of caffeine alone.
You might have to cut me off.
You know, that's going to be one of the new stats that you have when you talk about computers. You know, you want CPU and RAM and how much caffeine is running in the person who's doing it. Well, glad to have you guys here. Boy, it has been quite a week in all things digital and in the internet, and we're going to be talking in depth about something, but Microsoft's big Hollywood event. Did any of you kind of...
They surfaced a few things this week,
didn't they? Were you guys kind of waiting for that and waiting until it started to hear what it was? Did they catch you?
No, not really, because it's so many false starts with Microsoft, I hate to say it, that it's just there's no momentum behind it.
Yeah.
I hope that it takes off.
I think they created a little bit of buzz because they did finally what Apple has been doing, which is keep everything really secret.
Right? They managed to
and
do
they
it.
Managed, yeah,
they haven't
managed
done
well.
That very well in the past.
But of course, nobody was really, to Ed's point, I think nobody was really trying to uncover the secrets, right?
Right.
Yeah, I think what surprised many people was that they would do an Apple kind of thing because it is so un-Microsoft-ish.
To announce that.
Yep.
And the tablet they announced, because this is what was announced this week, the Surface, which is their new tablet.
And we'll be talking with Mike Wendland about that.
Got some neat things.
Yeah, and there was a Windows Phone 8 coming as well. But I was wondering, Shane, were you like on tenterhooks waiting for it to see what this was?
You know, the thing is, if you're in the industry, you kind of know those things. Sometimes, you know, and it wasn't zero surprise at all. I mean, for myself.
Mm-hmm.
You knew it was a tablet, eh?
Of course.
Okay.
I mean, we all kind of knew that was coming.
Well, we kind of figured if they didn't do that, what in the world could they do?
Yeah, I mean, right.
That would be worth the attention.
That's what it was going to be. We all knew that's where they had to go in the market,
right.
You know, to compete. And we're a little...
But they've had to go places before and didn't.
Yeah.
And they've been ahead of their time because they brought out tablets before.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, but they always did, as Foster pointed out, is they always did it through their OEMs. This is going to be a Microsoft device.
This is
their hardware.
I want to ask Mike Wendland about that because there's a lot. Oh, man. Commentators jumped on this like a chickens on June bugs. They were all over it. I tell you, the minute that the thing started and there was live streaming of what was going on, there was commentary going. I mean, the bloggers had their teeth set. You could see some of them, you know, had their knives out and their claws ready.
I think they all started beforehand, right? If you like Microsoft, you were really excited and really impressed.
Yes.
If you didn't like Microsoft, it didn't matter if they were going to unleash something absolutely, totally fantastic, it just wasn't going to matter.
Yeah, but from that, did you see how many people had the Apple products in the audience when they announced that?
No, I didn't.
It was probably more than half.
I'm surprised Microsoft didn't say, here's some masking tape. Put that over that Apple thing there.
But, you know, we'll talk with Mike a little bit more, but 62% of the tablet market is our iPads, right?
Oh, yeah. So, well, they created a niche, and I think, along what you said, Shane, they had to deal with that.
Correct, and I mean, it wasn't
they didn't create it, but they accelerated
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely. They created
were the
first
the
product.
One that was successful.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
They created the product that make that niche work,
right.
The tablet.
Yeah,
you're
absolutely
right on
absolutely.
And like I said, Microsoft had many false starts. They tried coming out with the tablet 8 years ago.
Well, no, wasn't it 2000? I think the Bill Gates actually... stood up and showed one that had, wasn't it an HP that had a stylus that ran it? Because they've had slates. Isn't it called a slate?
It's called a slate.
The slate.
I thought they've only had the slate for the name for 3 years.
Yeah, that wasn't the original.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, actually, they had Microsoft was going to come out with Slate, but it was not going to be a hardware device. It was going to be a digital newspaper way back
This goes back into the mid
to late 90s.
Yeah, you're right.
And so they had the name since then. Now they've repurposed it into a hard I think piece of hardware.
Regardless of the commentary this on this, and as I said, Mike Wendland, PC Mike Wendland, one of our favorite commentators, is coming up to talk about this. But I think regardless of the side you're on, this is a big stone that's been thrown into the pond, and it's going to have ripple effect in terms of actions, reactions, etc. And let's leave it at that, because I want to get to something, Shane, that I saw that fascinated me, that there was a piece of malware that went out around the world that apparently affected big companies in particular.
Yes.
It was a piece of malware that hit printers. And as a matter of fact, you had a customer that got hit with that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reading this, and I go, hey, I did have a customer with that, and I couldn't figure it out. I figured it was a PostScript issue or something, a driver issue that was wrong with the printer.
I haven't even heard of this. This is great.
Yeah, it was an HP LaserJet, and 1300. I'm sitting there, and as soon as the malware opened up, as soon as they started to print the first item, it would print until everything was emptied, until every sheet was gone. And it was just gibberish. So when we, in the field, when we get those, we think a driver.
Something's going wrong with the driver.
And I changed the driver. I did everything I knew, and it still wouldn't work. I finally did a complete scan and cleaning, and it fixed the problem.
Bang, there it was. Yeah. So it buried itself on the computer, not in the printer, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, it goes into the computer, and then it messes with the print spooling or the queue or something.
Yeah. Right.
And just eats up all the paper.
Yeah, but is that a cause or an effect? Was that the ultimate goal, was to mess up people's printers?
Apparently, they wanted to kill a lot of trees.
Sell more paper.
Use up a lot of ink.
Sell more paper.
Ink
and paper, that's it. Hey, we'll be back in just a moment. Mike Wendland will be our guest. He calls himself PC Mike. He's a commentator for NBC and a good friend of ours, talking about Microsoft's big announcements this past week. Mr. Mike Wendland, otherwise known as PC Mike. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, I'm great, guys. How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you for joining us here.
Yeah, it's great to hear you.
Now, Mike, let me set the scene. And I looked high and low for commentators to pick you because I figured you'd be the best, most balanced person. Because we've got titles out there like this. One says, Surface, Microsoft, what the is wrong with you? That was the title of one. The other one was, Why Microsoft Surface Pro will be the first real business tablet. In other words, Mike, the commentaries went to the extremes as soon as the Hollywood release of Microsoft's new tablet called the Surface happened on Monday. Have you ever seen a feeding frenzy like this before?
Well, you see it in just the opposite, of course, every time Apple releases a product. But this was an interesting one. It was a really interesting one. And if you just look at what Steve Ballmer, the Detroit-born head now of Microsoft, if you just look at his announcement of Microsoft entry into the tablet field and compare it with the way Apple does it, you had a laugh. It was poorly rehearsed. I don't think these guys rehearsed. They began to show the tablet, and it crashed before they had it booted up. And it was just kind of okay. There was no real information given.
Yeah.
We don't know how much it's going to cost. We don't know when it's going to be available. This played right into something Microsoft has done so many times. They are the ones who invented the phrase vaporware, announcing something that never shows up or shows up later. But all that aside, it's a gutsy move by Microsoft. Now, we'll talk about the product in a moment, but in terms of the industry, they immediately alienated most of the OEMs that they work with.
Now, Mike, let me challenge that for just a minute, because I saw a commentary that said, but wait a minute, didn't Google do the same thing? For instance, when they put out their Nexus phone, and then they put out a Nexus tablet, I think they're going to anyway. But in other words, they flew right in the face of their suppliers.
First of all, yeah, they did. But Google invented the phone, has all the rights to any phone anybody sells.
Sure.
In this case, and they work with a number of different manufacturers who do that Android system that really is all started with Google. Microsoft's entry here, though, is all of its own. It will be so tightly interwoven with Windows 8, which hopefully will come out, it looks like about October, and that's probably when we'll see these tablets shortly thereafter. They'll want to get them out there for Christmas. And with the Windows 8 phone, which we heard a little bit more about. So Microsoft is gutsy in that they're saying, we are going to make our hardware ourselves, which is a lot of people have said they should do. And but that's already starting to get, you know, the OEMs are starting to say, wait a minute, what happened to this partnership we had? But let's talk about the product.
Yeah, because one of the things, Ed, were you going to say something?
No.
I was going to say, the one of the things I had said was, and one of the commentaries I saw, this was kind of a prod. Some people are saying this is just like a feint, not in the sense of passing out, but a feint in the sense of a move that to kind of fake people out, but really to prod the OEMs to do this. Because you got to ask the question, why didn't some OEM come up with these brilliant ideas? They're not unthinkable.
Well, because everyone
they all
different.
Have. I mean, there's a gazillion tablets out there. In fact, I don't know if you guys know this, but Google is expected to announce its own tablet this coming week. And Microsoft is trying to one-up Google. That's why we saw this.
Okay, so that's what they did the jump. Okay, you were going to go to the hardware. Go ahead.
So the hardware. First of all, we don't know how much it costs. It's really confusing. We have since found out they're only going to release, at least initially, a Wi-Fi version with no connectivity to wireless networks, which really, you know, there goes any business use. So you're going to take it out of the office. They've announced two different versions: a pro version, which really is more like a ultrabook.
Right. They said that will compete in the business atmosphere and the ultrabooks.
Maybe, and it probably will. I think. Mm-hmm. I think it's cool. It looks cool. The product's cool. Then they showed what I think is the most innovative thing about it. Because let's face it, tablets are a dime a dozen, but they got a great cover that doubles as a very lightweight keyboard.
Yes, and
now
it's,
there are big bulky covers you can get now.
Right.
But this is pretty cool. And there's two variations we think of that cover. Strangely, they never showed the cover in use. Well, come on, guys, this is 2012. We demo stuff. They just showed the cover, pictures of it, a video of it, but they never showed it in use. So we don't know how it's going to look. None of the media that were there got a chance to really play with the keys.
Right.
So
it was like dangling meat before a pack of wolves and saying, is anybody hungry?
But, Mike, you know, they have the Logitech keyboard out for the iPad, and I have one. And it's about that thin. And if it were attached, like Microsoft is now showing it, I mean, it's not like this is new technology.
Does it have the clickable surface?
No, it's not. But I think it looks pretty cool for Microsoft. I remember, this is a company that brought us the Nook. So that's all I can say. You know, the Nook. I mean, they brought us the Zune.
The Zune.
The Nook is a great. But I think the key thing it's going to have that business will like is native application with Office, native integration with Office, the Office apps.
My sense, Mike, as I looked at this, was that the first one is going to be running on Windows RT, which is going to be Metro only version of that's the Tiles only. That's going to be the one that's going to be the consumer more device, and that the business device will be the other one, which is the Windows Pro one, which will be having a multi-core processor. And bigger hard drives, et cetera.
Yeah, and that's I think ultimately that's a pretty confusing, and consumers are not going to understand what they're doing. One is they're just going to know that there's a much better version out there. One of the things we see with many of the Android tablets, certainly with the iPad, is it's pretty much the same machine. The only thing that makes a difference is a little more memory, but in these it's very confusing as to what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
I think Microsoft. Really was jumped the gun on announcing this because there's just too many questions. We don't know what it's going to cost. We're hearing it'll be comparable to these other devices,
but Mike, they were
how comparable?
Yeah, they were trying to beat Google, as you said, right? And that's probably
that
why
like
they did it.
And let's face it. I mean, this whole tablet market is is so fragmented now. Apple has, you know, like 80-something percent. The rest, you know, we see some pretty cool stuff with Samsung out there. Mm-hmm. But that's about it. Nobody's really excited about any of these other tablets. And now Microsoft comes, and it's got two different series of processors that run it. We've got some questions about how it is all going to integrate.
Is this essentially a desperate gamble on the part of Microsoft? I mean, they're playing the whole farm on this.
Microsoft has been late to the party on everything it has done since the iPod came out. They hung to that Zune thing for how many years, and nobody bought a Zune that I know of, unless it was just to test it out or that somebody gave it to them as a gift. And I think they're doing. I think this tablet thing. I would just like to see something different, and it looks much the same. How are you going to beat all of those apps that are already out there?
That's a big angle. Shane, I think, had a comment.
Well, I mean, Microsoft is kind of known as the large scale beta testers. I mean, when they want to put something out, you know, they release it, we beta test it, then we get the right version down the road.
Well, and that's where it, you know. The market is, I think everybody's reaction was, well, hey, it's Microsoft. They're doing something. We haven't seen them do anything in a long time.
Yeah.
And it came on the heels. I think we wanted to hear a little bit more about this Windows 8 phone, which looks pretty cool, this phone. They've got a pretty good relationship with Nokia on this. Windows 8, I know you guys have probably had some looks at it.
We have. You know, Mike, we're running out of time here. I'm sorry. We're going to have to have, can you come back and please talk about some of the other things, too?
Well, just double my pay, you know, and I'll be back. Yeah.
All right, you got it. Twice as much. Mike Wendler, our guest here. Look for it on our homepage, PC Mike. We'll be back. Welcome once again to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Shane Hamlin, and Gary, you have a distinguished guest to introduce to our audience.
I do, and it's actually somebody that I've known about for quite a while, and we just had an opportunity to meet on Thursday. I was at in Ann Arbor at an opening of The Forge, which was Pillar Technologies' office in Ann Arbor, and they invited a lot of the people in the entrepreneurial and the tech community to come help them celebrate entering the Ann Arbor market. And it's in a really unique building called the Tech Brewery, and I went, first of all, because it was Pillar, and I've known those guys, and they do great work. But I knew that there were going to be an awful lot of really cool entrepreneurs from Ann Arbor, and I also thought I might see Doug there. And Doug, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
We got to press a button there, the red one, I think it is. There you go.
There you go.
Now we got you.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
You know, the reason that I've known about you for a long time is while you grew up in the tech community, you've been really helping entrepreneurs in the tech community now for quite a while. Tell us a little bit about Tech Brewery.
Sure. So the Tech Brewery is an old 1880s brewery out of Ann Arbor, Michigan that we've converted into more or less a startup co-op of sorts. We have about 30 different companies there, and the goal of the Tech Brewery is really to allow new entrepreneurs to get started in a very low-friction, easy sort of way, without requiring a lot of overhead, a lot of expense to be there, and being in a supportive community where there's lots of other folks just like themselves. We started the brewery about 3 years ago as I was doing another company called Zatu, and we were realizing that actually there were a lot of other companies that could have actually used the same kind of support that we found from, again, being in a facility where we had lots of other folks that were doing the same things that we were. And so we decided to expand the operation. We built out more of the suites to allow for much smaller companies than we normally see taking office space. Companies of as small as two people, two guys and laptops typically would have been sitting in a cafe.
In a Starbucks somewhere now we're sitting for a year at the brewery.
exactly. And we started to hold some events. And the events were really a thing that I think drew a lot more of the folks to us. Mm-hmm. Building a little bit of critical mass around this kind of activity, and so anyway, my current company is there as well, and we're probably about to leave because
we're out of space.
You've all grown the space. Well, but anyway, and this is kind of an incubator concept, isn't it? Where maybe the old term was incubator, where you take something that's very tiny, but then you allow it to grow so that eventually it leaves the nest.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. The challenge, I think, is always that you know, we see a lot of traditional incubators that are run by you know, by groups typically funded by the MEDC or other state organizations, and these tend to be a little bit more a little more structured. And a lot of what we really have at the brewery is a lot very unstructured. It's really meant to be a community of peers.
And what's really interesting about this is that this is not something that, you know, I was involved with the very first incubator in Ann Arbor that the Chamber of Commerce purchased the building and put together the advisory mm-hmm. board. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been involved with some others where MEDC
Small Business Administration
helped.
Doesn't, right?
Right. No, no.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, no. This was the Chamber of Commerce did the first one. MEDC through SPARC did another one. This is something that Doug has just kind of done. It's private. They don't get funded. This is not a big, as he said, not big programmatic kind of activity. It's, hey, we've got some cool technology. We're willing to share our ideas, our thoughts. Come on in, share yours. And it's just a hotbed of technology ideas, isn't it?
Well, I think the thing that's really
people share.
Yeah, the thing that's really changed in the last decade, I think, in terms of technology and starting new technology companies, is that it's cost so much less than ever did before to get a new company off the ground. You know, with the advent of cloud computing and
yes, yeah, you don't have to have a ton of hardware to make a lot of things happen.
That's right. So it really can be, you know, two people and laptops in a cafe who start a new company.
I love the grassroots nature of this. You know, and it's very typically Ann Arbor. You know, because I remember when I was going to college, that was where the SDS was and a lot of the other crazies. You know, a lot of grassroots wildness going on there. But it's neat also because it seems to say that there's a lot of energy going on there, a lot of resources to make something like this happen, because you know, because you build it, they won't necessarily come. But if they, in terms of the tech people, are there, they're gonna grow.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that predated the tech brewery actually starting was we started an organization called A2 Geeks, a nonprofit that was meant to really sort of organize a lot of the geeks in Ann Arbor. And the mission of A2 Geeks as a nonprofit is to support the geek culture and community mm-hmm. in Ann Arbor. Because the thing that people didn't realize was that there's actually over 60 different groups in town that are holding an average of two to three events every night.
So oh, my goodness.
So there's actually a lot of activity in Ann Arbor, just at the very grassroots level, yeah. People coming together to, you know, learn about programming and learn about building companies. Again, it's not really driven top-down in any sort of bureaucratic way. It's all been sort of this grassroots activity.
Yeah, there's well over 100 technology companies that you've never heard of, that are doing great business. They're getting started. Some of them are going well beyond the startup phase now into multi-millions of dollars of revenue. And the best part about it is they can go in a non-assuming atmosphere and share cool technology.
What I like about this, too, I just to put open this perspective up a little bit, because we've heard of some cool things that have happened down near the big tech center in Detroit,
right down
by the river.
Mm-hmm.
Tech Town, you know. And I think Grand Rapids,
you know, sponsored
also
by somebody trying to do good work, but this isn't the community itself coming together. Somebody
exactly.
doing it for them and then letting them come in
but
and foster
seems,
there.
I'm saying this
which
I,
is good. I'm,
it seems
really
like there's a lot of
stuff.
These points, pardon me, points of light. That's an old image. But I mean, there's a lot of these kind of places that are sparking
they're
up
they're
around
LEDs
Michigan.
Now.
They're LEDs. I love it. But there's a lot of this energy that's out there. I guess I want you folks to hear that a lot of things are happening, whereas sometimes we look around us and say, what's growing here? And we don't see things happening. But under the surface, there's an incredible amount of stuff. It's boiling.
Yeah, I think there's always been a lot of really tremendous engineering talent in Michigan generally. But I think the thing that's really happened again is that the fact that the activation energy required to actually get a company off the ground is so low that every engineer at this point could start a company. And the thing that really is the barrier is the know-how and the culture that surrounds that, being able to get folks to figure out how to actually put together the teams to go and go after a hard market problem and go build business around that. That's the thing that I think really just requires a bit of grassroots organization and culture, a peer support network that allows folks to have other folks to fall back on when they have problems or for advice. Or for mentorship
right.
as they go toward
mentorship. I love that idea. Yeah.
You know, we're talking to Doug Song. And Doug, tell us a little bit about your company, because you've got now another new company that's growing pretty rapidly.
Yeah, so I'm a bit of a one-trick pony. I've always done security, computer security my whole life.
One-trick pony, but multiple times, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Grow it, sell it.
Yeah, that's the hope, right? And so, yeah, the last company we did that was the big exit for us was Arbor Networks. We started back in 2000, grew that about 300 people. And Arbor's really the reason that the internet has not melted down since 2000. We're deploying the backbone of pretty much every global carrier worldwide.
Wow.
Defending against DDoS, or distributed denial of service attacks, mm-hmm. People being flooded off the internet.
But just to explain to folks who are listening about sure. that, you are saying that in Ann Arbor, this is this organization, company that it grew up, mm-hmm. that really keeps things, that keeps the gears running smoothly on the internet, period, right. by stopping the frequent attacks that are out there, the DDoS attacks, where people flood a website with just a ton of data in order so that it just smothers it.
Yes.
And that would
requests,
be, that, right. that could actually just wipe out, and has, you know, taken, well, the FBI, I think, have taken off. I mean, all
a while ago, not anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
But
not,
you folks are,
mostly not anymore.
You folks are, right. Doug, are involved in making sure that doesn't happen so things can keep on going.
That's right. And so Arbor at this point now has more or less reached the sort of market saturation. We have 80% of all tier one providers worldwide as customers.
Wow.
And so, you know, it's time for me to move on and do something new.
Sure.
We started Duo Security since, you know, the big problem in 2000 were these 15-year-old kids in Canada that were doing this exact kind of thing, taking out eBay, Amazon, E-Trade, CNN, and Yahoo, and wiping them off the map, really for bragging rights.
Yeah.
These days, it's the same kind of thing, 15-year-olds that are now penetrating all these organizations. I mean, we've seen it all in the last 2 years, extracting all their passwords and logins, and in many cases actually posting all the details publicly. And now, you know, Duo, the new company, Duo Security, is really oriented around stopping those kinds of attacks.
And there's an example of one of those just in the news. Yep. Hacker-claimed mass bank breach. They are releasing, they say, Visa and MasterCard data, and they're talking about at least 1,700 account details that are out there.
Yeah.
This is the kind of knuckleheads that you're going after.
Yeah, these are the kind of breaches that we're working very hard to stop right now. So the modus operandi for a lot of these attackers has really changed, where instead of going and sort of beating down the front door and trying to break in through the firewall or hit a website directly, attackers are going after users and following users into those networks.
And then gobbling up the information there.
Right.
Doug, I tell you what, let's take a little break, because I'd like to come back and give you a chance to talk a little bit more about this. Kind of exciting talking about developing tech businesses here in our state of Michigan, out of Ann Arbor, and also about these questions about security, because I got some other questions to ask you as well. Doug Song, our guest right now, back with more conversation with him and with an Internet Advisor takeaway just for you. Thank you for joining us here on the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, and our gang in studio here. And by the way, behind the glass, some folks who help make our program possible. Angela Satisabal, who was with us handling the program today, doing the producing. Thank you very much. And
that was
also
pretty good.
Yeah,
Rich,
got right
she provided
that.
A pronouncer on the screen. This lady knows how to deal with hosts. She's been producing here at the radio station for a long time. Thank you very much. You know, she gives you a pronouncer as well, so you're not a complete knucklehead. And Rich Luzinski, thank you as well for being there as our engineer. Coming up shortly, Annie Nichols will be joining us in producing.
I can say Annie Nichols.
We can all... With us in studio, by the way, folks, is Doug Song, who is the founder CEO of Duo Security. We're talking a little bit about security with him, but also somebody who's involved in a project called the TechBrewery.org. It's a wonderful incubator, but it's a very much a grassroots kind of thing. This is just the people. It's not business organizations or government that's making this happen. This is the techies out there just kind of getting together, the geeks getting together and saying, we're going to represent.
So, Doug, the fabric of the entrepreneurial community, it wouldn't be as rich without the MEDC and Ann Arbor.
Explain what that is.
Spark, just the Michigan Economic Development Corporation.
Yeah, thank you.
Not only do they provide financial resources, but people to actually help get things organized and whatnot. You know, Tech Town in Detroit and so many other places where they've really helped make a difference, and all of that's necessary. Doug, what was really fascinating and what was impressive to me was that you just said, you know, I think this is important. I'm going to go help. I have some things to share, but I'm encouraged by so many other technologists in the area. Let's put some resources together. And you did this all privately. right, to help out. And I think between you and Doug Smith, the actual owner of the Tech Brewery, I mean, what a my hat's off to you. What a great thing for you to do.
Well, you know, it's weird to get complimented on something like this because in the Silicon Valley, you know, it's sort of what people do normally, right? There's
right.
Sort of notion of paying things forward, and this is where
that's
where
a great concept.
Yeah, we're trying to bring a lot of that culture back here because that's largely what I grew up with. You know, a lot of my history is in open source, where we write software and publish it freely, and that sort of gift culture of being able to share software.
Yes.
And
thank you for pointing that out. Some of you may not realize that really is part of the culture of the internet. Initially was, let's all make this work together. The whole notion of an internet where it's not a toll road, it's an internet. It's a wide open freeway that we should all be able to get on, develop on, and open source is a very big part of that concept. Just to fill in for the folks who listen.
But people need to get paid when they do things, and that was always the other side of it, right? Which is what we're finding with open source and so many other efforts like this today, which is, you know, there used to be motivation 2.0, and there still is in sales and certain professions, where you do something and you get a reward for it. You know, people say, if you do this, we'll give you that. You know, if you study hard, you'll get good grades. If you hit your if you hit your numbers, if you're in a sales role, we'll give you a bonus. Doug and now so many other people, especially in the tech community, but so many other places as well, this is more intrinsic kind of motivation. It's, I want to do this because it pleases me to help other people.
Yeah, I think it's also just...
I think that exists.
Yeah, it's also a matter of actually building the kind of community you want to be part of, right? In the Valley, you know, a lot of folks that make a lot of money, and it's really is a sort of a phenomenon of new money, folks that step on a $50 million bill or something. Boy, what should I do with this thing now? I should go spend it.
Google made a few of those just recently.
Facebook.
Facebook.
But that is the expectation, right? That if you make a little bit of money, that you go and you pay it forward and you bring along the next. What else are you going to do? I mean, you could go retire and sit around.
That's not
but
fun.
It's like Instagram. What was Instagram sold for? Was it $1 billion? Those guys stepped on a $1 billion bill. I wanted to ask a question, and this is getting off a little bit on the security side, but we had had Rich Esteen in studio with us, and matter of fact, the former head of the CIA as well, General
Hayden.
Hayden was with us. And we were talking with them about a whole new class of threats. Now, I know that you started out with dealing with the Canadian kids just trying to blow the doors off of websites and freeze them up. And then now you've moved up another level with Duo Security to the attempts to infiltrate. Are you seeing out there now a new class of malware that is... trying to on the business level, I don't think it's new, as a matter of fact, that's been out there that is really insidious. Is that the kind of thing you're tackling?
Yeah, so there's been a rise in what are really targeted attacks against users as a mechanism to get into the organizations they're part of. And so since 2005, really, where we saw the rise of these first Brazilian banking Trojans, we've seen now a whole lot of targeted malware that, you know, basically opens up these organizations like a can of worms. I can send 3 emails to almost any organization in the world, get somebody to open one of them and ride their access in to get access to anything that employee has access to. Mm-hmm. And this, in fact, is how one of our largest competitors, RSA, was breached back in March of last year.
Wow.
And really is almost child's play. There are toolkits you can download. It's it's a matter of some simple customization. And so these are the kind of basic attacks that we're really defending against, a category of attacks called account takeover. And this is largely, this is difficult to stop when the only barriers that we really have to these kinds of attacks currently are the strengths and security of your username and password, right?
Yeah, right.
So what Duo does, we call ourselves Duo because we do two-factor authentication. Mm-hmm. We basically provide a strong second factor besides just that knowledge base factor, which can be shared, stolen, copied, intercepted. And we use a mobile device, right? The device you already have in your pocket. So that's what Duo does. And okay. At any rate,
But you exactly are what Richard was talking about. There's a whole new creativity out there now that is growing up to deal with these threats as well.
I'm glad.
Thank you.
And what's really important is there were some rudimentary steps a while back, and it didn't, make sense. I know that, in another lifetime, another job, we had some security experts coming in, and they said, well, you have to have these key fobs, right? And they would take and change the number, and you'd have, and they'd give you a minute or so, and if you didn't log on in the minute, it would change the number. And it worked really well, except you had that, and you actually, most people put it right in the computer bag where they store their computer. So if somebody stole the computer, they also get the fob. And now they only have four digits that they had to somehow guess instead of something else. Now, the good thing was it was random, so that made it a little more difficult, right?
Yeah, it's also changing that, you know, the way attackers are actually taking control of these computers are they're actually implanting, you know, what are called remote access Trojans on people's machines, so they can actually remotely control your laptop, your home computer, or the computer in your office. And so anything that you can do, the attacker can do as well, which is why you have to have something that's completely so-called out of band. You know,
right.
if they have to compromise your phone as well as your computer, it just makes the bar that much higher.
Doug, I want to thank you very much for the work that you've done, particularly with the Tech Brewery and that paying it forward kind of thing. It's kind of neat. You're now moving on.
Two geeks.
Yeah, and you're moving on now with Duo Security, moving out of the house and setting up shop. Congratulations to you on that, and thank you very much. And by the way, folks, if you want to find out more, you find links to Duo Security here online as well. You can click on that and find out more about that. I want, before we step into our next hour, by the way, the next hour is the one in which you're going to call in at 800-859-0957. And you're going to get some answers to the questions you have right now about your computers. Before we do that, something I want to start doing every week on our program is called the Internet Advisor Takeaway. And it's going to be something that you can take away from the program and hopefully implement on your computer or phone or whatever it may be. And this week, it's something Rick Broida gave us called Songza. It's a free streaming music service. Songza.com. And at the beginning of this next hour, I'll tell you a little bit more about it. But that's our Internet Advisor takeaway for this week for you. Free of charge. Thank you very much, Rick Broida, our gadget guy, for giving us that lead called Songza, Songza.com. And I'll tell you more about that at the beginning of the next hour. We'll also look for your calls at 800-859-0957. And Eric Anderson will be here with his Mac Minute as well. Another hour of the Internet Advisor is on the way to you. Please do stick around and enjoy it with us.
You've been listening to a podcast of the first hour of WJR's Internet Advisor.
Thank you once again for joining us for a whole lot of fun here and some serious fun and sense of getting answers to your questions. And with me in studio, my posse, that is Mr. Gary Baker, the Internet Advisor, who has, with for the last 15 years, you and I have been tackling this
thing. We have. It's been fun. Every single show has been an adventure, and it really has been rewarding.
It never fails to change. It continues to change.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what's fun. And you know, the fun part, and we keep saying this, we ought to get a webcam in here to show people what goes on in between, you know, the commercials and the news and whatnot, because
we'd have to dress up for it then.
Oh, that's true.
See, yeah. In radio, typically, you can...
summer dress.
Exactly. You can come in dressed any way you want because it's your voice that people
hear. You know, I used to... maybe I shouldn't say this, but since I've already started, I will. You know, the 2 years I did Channel 7 Action News as the Internet Advisor every week, I used to go in and Eric Smith used to have a suit and tie on, or a coat and tie and a white shirt and shorts. Because he stood behind the anchor desk at Channel 7. Eric, sorry if I gave this away, but it was great.
Well, hey,
summertime.
Guys, no makeup, Eddie. Okay, Ed Riddell, don't have to worry about it. No makeup here. And Shane, you're okay.
And I have a face for radio.
We all do.
I think that's true.
That's why I did only 2 years.
Shane Handler, good to have you in here this week, too.
Yes. This is when the fun starts for me, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
Answering people's questions.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll start out with a couple easy ones. So,
well, we got a whole bunch of people here.
Okay,
I want to do something quickly, though, before we've got Eric Anderson with his Mac Minute. I want to get to that in just a second. But I also want to tell you folks about something new we're doing every week here on the Internet Advisor. We're trying to leave you with what we're calling the Internet Advisor Takeaway. And if you go to our homepage and go to the bottom, look at the little gift boxes there. Next to it, we're going to do something every week. It'll be a little something. It could be an iPad application. It could be a piece of software. We're trying to make it free if possible, but it's something that we've found useful. And Rick Broida, who is our gadget guy, in his CNET Cheapskate column, came up with this one. It's a music service that is a free streaming music service called Songza, S-O-N-G-Z-A. Have you tried it, Shane, at all?
I haven't, no.
It is wonderful. I've been running it now for about a week. What it does essentially is you sign into it, get a password, et cetera, and no cost, and then if, for instance, we would click on it right now, it would say it's Saturday afternoon, and it's this thing called concierge, like when you go in a hotel, somebody who helps you get things done. And it says, just click on that, and it says, it's Saturday afternoon, what do you want to do? I want to be in a hammock. I want to get some work done. And then it gives you options of different kinds of playlists around that, so that you can then pick something that fits your particular mood or atmosphere. And it is just a whole lot of fun when you dive into it. So again, folks, that link is on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. And at the very bottom of the page, you'll see it there. It is there for your taking. Please take this. This is, you know, the old book, Abby Kaufman. Steal this, you know, and then grab it as you can. The link is there. Songza. It's a free music service, and just try it out yourself. It's a whole lot of fun. I want to get to Eric Anderson and his Mac Minute, and then we're going to start taking some calls here. So, Mr. Eric Anderson, what do you have to say about Apple?
This week on the Mac Minute, an iCloudy day. Have you been experiencing any issues with your iCloud service? That's what some users are asking each other this week. Apple Insider reports some iCloud users experienced a brief outage on Wednesday. The outage affected iCloud's Mail, PhotoStream, and iMessage services. iMessage users may have been unable to send messages during the outage. Other reports have claimed the iTunes Store and Apple Developer Portals have also experienced brief outages. All iCloud, iTunes, and Developer Portal services are currently back up and running as of Wednesday evening. For the Internet Advisor, I'm Eric Anderson, and that's the Mac Minute, give or take a few seconds.
Unless there's a few clouds besides the fluffy white ones with iCloud. You know, we were talking a little bit about this. This whole business of iCloud and having everything going on the cloud has its risks with it. And this week, Twitter was down for a while, Eddie, I think you said?
Yes, it was. A couple hours later last week, yep.
And I think, Shane, you told me that even WOW, the
correct
cable service.
Yeah, they had some issues on Friday.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So there is a dark lining.
And what you were saying, Shane, is that even when you called them, that their phones went right to voicemail.
Yeah, it rings once and then goes a busy.
And that's one of the things that happens when you have networking issues,
yes,
because so many businesses now use IP-based phones. Foop! Network's affected. You can't even reach anyone.
All right. Here's our phone number again, 800-859-0957. And let's say hello to Carol out there in Farmington Hills. Carol, thank you very much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. Seems like you're having some concerns about a call from Microsoft.
Yeah. A gentleman keeps calling. A while back, someone was calling me from Microsoft periodically. But this guy keeps calling, and he called twice already today and anywhere from 2 to 4 times yesterday.
Ooh.
And he said he wants to help me to keep my computer from crashing. And he started to help me one day, but then I think the computer needed charging. I have a little netbook. So he said he'd call me back again.
Oh.
And now I'm afraid to answer the phone. And when I call the number, it's from a 600 number. When I call the number, I always get a busy signal to see what it goes to.
Yeah, because it's a phone bank. It's not a...
So you actually, Carol, you know what's going on, right? That's not
Microsoft.
He's not from Microsoft at all.
He's not from Microsoft, and he could be from South Africa.
How did he find my number, though?
Well, he just dialed the number. Were lucky.
Yeah,
he just
won the lotto.
Oh, dear.
He's trying to scam you.
Yeah, exactly.
He was a scam artist.
He never asked for money, nothing.
Not yet.
To keep it from crashing.
Yep,
he
not
says
yet.
It's going to crash.
Well, what he'll do is he'll help you by putting some technology, key logger on your computer or something.
It would have happened down the road a piece. Carol,
Microsoft doesn't call you.
We're going to put you on hold, and we'll have some comments for you and for the other folks who get this as well. So hang on, okay? Back in just a moment with Carol and the rest of you at 800-859-0957. Thank you for joining us here, the second hour of our program, the one where we answer your questions. And the number again, 800-859-0957. Don't sit on your hands. This is the time to get on the phone and just kind of get in touch with us, because very often when we tackle your problem, we're tackling problems for a lot of people. And Carol, we want to go back out to you just a moment before we get stepped to Doug, who's our next caller in line here at 800-859-0957. Carol, you were saying you had gotten calls from somebody that claimed to be from Microsoft and was there to help you with your computer problems. And he said, how did he get hold of my number? You know something? They are randomly dialing numbers and is looking for the first person that will pick up the phone and say,
And actually, instead of just kind of slamming the phone down. You know, well, if you'll talk to them, then
they're on their way.
Now you're caught, right? It's opening up spam. You know, if you don't ever open it and just delete it, you're okay. But if you open it and you send a little notice back that says, "Oh, now we want more. We want the full images to download or something." Now they know that somebody's opening spam. Yeah. And if you talk to them or send anything back, even if you want it. I used to, when I'd get something, I'd go, wow, that's kind of cool. I would never answer the spam. I would take and say, I would delete it because I don't want anybody to think I actually answer spam. I would then take and you know, key in the URL, the company name, and then I'd go and I'd maybe look at the product even more. But Shane, you never answer spam.
Shane, you had a question.
You know, I know Gary mentioned that, you know, this is more than likely a scam, and he's fishing for information.
It's not more than likely. It is a scam. Microsoft just doesn't do this. Right?
But I was just curious. Do you have an internet? Do you have internet phone? And are you listed? I wanted to know these two things.
Carol?
Am I listed, you say?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. No, the phone is a cell phone. It's not even under my name. Someone else pays the bill.
So it's a randomizer.
Just a random dialing program, Carol. So I think I probably could tell you if, in the next 2 days, you know what that number is. Anytime you see it come up, you don't answer it.
Yeah, he'll go away. He'll finally go away.
He will go away eventually.
You know, he's not getting what he wants.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And when I get calls like that, I say, please remove me off your call list. Do not call me back again.
Yep.
Boom.
Right.
Done. Exactly.
If it's a legitimate call, and
they'll pay attention.
Then they won't call you back because they can't. They're not allowed to, and there's criminal penalties if they do. So continue.
If it comes from South Africa or Russia or something like that,
they can keep calling.
They can keep calling.
Basically, you don't have to answer it. Just ignore it and know it's not Microsoft, and know they don't want to help you. Okay, the number again, 800-859-0957. Put down the lemonade, get out of the hammock, and give a call and get some solutions to your problems. Let's say hello to Doug. Hi, Doug. How you doing?
Real good, thank you.
Good. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. You have a question about Excel that I see?
Yes. I have an Excel file that's been building. I've been adding things to it for years. But anyway, I have a lot of hyperlinks in the Excel file to Word documents.
Okay.
Well, everything had been working good up until about a week ago when I went to click on one of the hyperlinks, and a little window pops up that says Microsoft Excel, and then it says there's a red X or an X, and it says this operation has been canceled due to restrictions in effect on this computer. Please contact your system administrator. Well, as far as I know, I don't have a system administrator.
That's you.
This is
I know, but I mean, I never just, you know. Yeah.
And it's a personal computer.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right?
It's my
not
own
a work
computer. Okay.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That's kind of a standard pop-up, I think, I'm guessing.
Right.
It seems to be like a security issue.
Right.
But real quick, and there's a couple different things that I think it could be. Now, you said you have links not necessarily to the web, but to Word documents, right?
Yes.
So, and I would imagine those documents are still available.
Oh, yeah, they're on the computer.
Yeah, I mean, to me it sounds like a group a policy security issue, something set, because what I would try is create a, you know, just on your computer, just create another user and try opening it in a different user.
Okay.
And see if it works. And if it works, then, you know, because you did say it works with your wife's computer, correct?
Yeah, I took the file and I put it on a flash drive, and I went to my wife's computer and loaded it on her computer, and it worked fine. Well, no, wait, let me back up.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't totally work because I didn't have the Word document in those two, but I didn't get the error message.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
It seems to me, this is my opinion, it seems to me that you do have some kind of a policy issue.
Well, and couldn't it be file-oriented?
Well, it could, but the first question I want to ask is, have you had any security updates from Microsoft? Have you uninstalled software recently? Because
there were an awful lot of updates in June. So I went back and I uninstalled every update back to May 9th.
And you still have the same problem.
And I still had the same problem. So then I uninstalled the Microsoft Office. I took Excel and Word off my computer
and then reinstalled. Okay,
I reloaded it. Mm-hmm. I still have the same problem.
Well, so here's how about Chrome? Have you tried? Have you uninstalled Chrome recently?
Yeah.
You did?
Yes.
Okay, because when I did a quick Google search on this, one of the things that it said is that many users have been complaining about this issue because they uninstalled Chrome, and now Chrome isn't there to redirect any type of hypertext to the default browser. Because it left something out of the registry. So one of the things you could potentially try, and you could just type in that error message in Google, and it'll give you several Microsoft articles to potentially fix it. And Shane's right. More than likely, if you try logging in as a different user on this computer, the problem might be fixed. Okay, but what you could do is go into, you said you're running Windows 7?
No, I'm XP. Running Vista.
Oh, you're running Vista.
Pardon me. I'm sorry.
So what you want to do is reset your default browser back to Internet Explorer. That might take care of it.
Well, I did do that.
Okay.
So, Doug, here's an idea.
Okay.
It's probably file-related.
Okay.
So take and highlight all of the content and open up a brand-new Excel worksheet and just paste it in.
Oh.
Well, I tried going into another Excel worksheet and creating a hyperlink.
No, that's not what I was suggesting.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
Well,
so,
say it again, Gary.
So I was suggesting that you could take and try it, right? But copy all of the content. Just, you know, copy everything that you have and paste it into a new document.
Like Control A, so copy all?
Copy that whole worksheet into a new document. Yeah. Didn't try it.
You could. That would be the next thing that I would try.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, I have your email address, and I'll send you the article that I found about in the registry where to go to potentially fix a problem when you uninstall Chrome. When you uninstalled Chrome, is that when the problem approximately happened, or did you uninstall Chrome? You know,
It's hard to say. See, I installed Chrome because I was having it was taking an awful long time for me to get in the internet, and. So I decided, you know, I've listened to your program, and and you often say, you know, have more than one way to get in the internet. So
right, more than one browser. Yep.
I installed Chrome, but Chrome didn't improve my problem any as far as getting into the internet. So I decided to uninstall Chrome.
Mm.
And you could actually just leave it if you wanted to.
Yeah. Well, I probably should have, but you know, I was trying to keep things nice and clean.
Yeah, we all try to do that. Yeah. Too. We finally,
good housekeeping.
Good housekeeping is not always the best thing.
Doug,
let's
see if we can
computer.
Summarize some things here, so we can we need to take a break just in a moment. Maybe some other folks are coming in as well. We want to get to them. So, all guys, right. let's see if we can kind of wrap things up and give him some pointers then to try.
When I've used. You know, and again, I'll go back to the copy and paste. That's worked for me.
Do
when
a new
I've
document.
Had, I've had a lot of really extensive, intensive use of Excel, and sometimes it just stops processing.
Gets hinky.
And when it does that, it does create a problem. And I've had to use this technique.
That's
worked
for you, Nick. And then Ed, you've got some articles from Microsoft. If you put that article in, if you Google for it, those are things that come up as
right,
well.
Right, and
Microsoft.
I just sent him an email on it.
Okay, good. Shane, anything else to add on that?
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's a policy issue. So just create a new user and then try to open
that was
back
the other thing. Yes, create a new user. Okay, Doug, so you have a bunch of suggestions there. Give them a try and let
us know. Please
let us know how it works. Okay. Thank you very much, Doug, for giving us a call. Hey, Dave out there in Garden City, we'll be with you in just a moment. And for you at 800-859-0957, we're going to be coming back to help you. Thank you for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. By the way, we have a resource I hope you're taking advantage of, and that is our Facebook page as well. Throughout the week, as interesting stories come through, we'll pile them in there so that you can use it as one place to touch and keep in touch. And if you'd like to communicate with us, that's another great way of doing it. Of course, our homepage, internetadvisor.net, is where you'll find all the notes from today's program, links to Mike Wendland's site, also to Doug Song's Duo Security and a Tech Brewery, if you're interested in that. And it's also the place you'll find our Internet Advisor takeaway for this week, which is Songza, a free music streaming service that was mentioned by our gadget guy, Rick Broida. All right, let's get back to our phone calls and say hello to Dave from Garden City. Dave, welcome to the Internet Advisor. You got a big record collection you don't want to lose.
Well, it's not a big one, but it's an important one. An important one. Tijuana Brass, Elvis Presley, The Beatles, Chicago Cream.
Ooh, all that vinyl stacked up there.
Yeah, the problem is I bought this machine about 2 years ago, and I finally got around trying to use it the other day. And after I called somebody else to try to help me work on it, we were able to get it recorded, but it sounded really terrible.
Ooh.
It's innovative technology, and I don't know if it's the needle or if I can find another needle that would even fit it.
Hmm.
Now, what does this device do? It's a turntable, obviously. Is it one of the USB ones?
It's a turntable that you can either plug into your USB port, or they have like the red and white cable for your video camera, and you can plug that into your mic. It's a different cable that plugs into that and plugs right into the from the turntable right into the computer. But my problem was is I was getting really bad quality when we got one song taped. I mean, it wasn't even worth it.
No.
Now the machine was only like $80. Was one of these Black Friday special things.
Right. Now was there special software that shipped with it that allowed it to capture?
Yeah, well, they gave me one CD that said drivers and insulation thing, and even on the drivers, you still had to go find another driver off the internet for it.
Probably an updated one.
Yeah. Yep. But what operating system are you running?
Well, it was Windows 7.
Okay. And this device probably came out when it was still Windows Vista.
So they just updated.
So automatically goes out, checks for the latest driver. And, good companies will update their drivers when they need to. So
it's a possibility that the companies have changed hands as well.
They're certainly going to change drivers. So.
You said innovative.
It was a lot more complicated to try to even get it recorded. But when we did get it recorded, it was just so bad.
No.
So I'm thinking maybe it's a needle.
Well,
it could be. Now, I've heard some people that say, because they can now pick up all the little imperfections because they're doing it digitally and they're capturing so much more information than what your ear can hear from vinyl, that they pick up those imperfections and
all the pops and snaps.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I would try is you have the composite out, which is the video and the sound. You could pop that into an old fashioned stereo
and see what it sounds like
and bypass the computer altogether just to see
isolate the computer
component and plug it into the audio in jack if you can of something else. Even an old guitar amp would work or something like that. Even a camcorder.
I want to put them on CDs.
Well, I know, but you're doing, this is diagnostic. Yeah. You want to plug the output, the composite output of this thing. You usually have a yellow and a red, and you want to plug that into the audio in of something, like an old stereo or the microphone of your, a tape recorder, anything.
Right.
That has even an old video player, that used to do audio-video in.
Just so you can hear
what
the actual audio sounds like, because you're right, it may be a bum needle. And in the old days of vinyl, you can get a needle bent very, very easily.
Yeah, and if it sounds like crud with coming out of an audio device, then it's probably the needle, and there's nothing wrong with the computer end of it.
And the worst thing is the computer will pick up every little hiccup that's there.
Yeah, it will. I just went to Google and I put vinyl to CD conversion reviews. Software reviews, and there's a number of reviews. CNET has one, PC World has, and so I haven't had time to really look at all of the reviews, but there's top 10 reviews is another one. You got to look at two or three or four sometimes because some of these review sites are actually owned by the companies.
Be careful
so
of that.
So you got to be real careful if it's not a reputable, like a CNET or PC World or somebody that normally does reviews.
I just realized on most laptops and computers, you also have a microphone in jack, and the composite out, which is the chain, the yellow or the red? That's the audio.
Red and white.
Or red and white.
Red and white audio,
and your yellow is video.
Okay, so you could take the yellow.
Or the white.
Can you guys hold on? I got a state trooper coming up on my car because I pulled over the side to talk to you.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
Just put him on.
Hold on one second.
Well, maybe he'll have an answer for you.
So I stopped to talk.
Good.
Okay, I'm fine.
Probably not the best place to pull over is on the freeway.
Yeah, I'm on WJR. Okay. I'm on WJR right now talking to the technology fellas.
Oh, okay. You work for them or something?
No. I'm on my way to Ohio.
Could you put him on and we'll talk to him? could you put the officer?
It's probably not a safe bet.
You're on the radio right now too.
If you'd put him on, we'll talk to him.
Okay. I'll be done in a minute.
Like this, sir.
Okay.
I'll be on the off ramp or something, okay?
All right, I'll go up to the off ramp. Thank you.
Thank you, officer.
Thank you, officer. Dave, you're a brave man. Thank you very much. You've made real radio happen here today.
Hey, I got a question.
Hang on, Dave. Let's give you a chance. We're going to put you in hold so you can get off to the off ramp, okay?
Yep. And then we'll take our next caller.
Yeah,
and we'll put you on hold.
We'll put you on hold, Dave, and we'll come back to you in just a moment. All right, let's go to the next caller. That is incredible. Yeah. By the way, folks, when you do that, coming off the side of the expressway on the shoulder is not wise. And the state trooper just told him, off the expressway and you're safer there. Okay, let's go to Nan. Nan from Cleveland. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Tell us you're safe.
Yeah, I'm safe, but I sort of had a couple of questions for you.
Okay, sure. Then go right ahead, Nan. Thank you very much.
I'm just getting into this computer stuff.
Sure. Uh-huh.
So I had the wireless put in my home.
Mm-hmm.
Now I haven't decided whether I'm going to get the tablet or I'm going to get which computer I'm going to get. But my question to you is, how difficult is it when I get one of those to hook? Can I hook it up myself?
You will have to learn a few things, but I suggest that you'd want to because it's not very hard, but you do have to do a little bit of reading and pay attention. You know, if you had a grandson or granddaughter, they wouldn't read at all. They'd just go play with it until it got hooked up. So you don't have to do, don't start with page one of the manual and read it. Is there anybody that could help you at all?
Well, yeah, maybe, but I wanted to learn myself.
Then I would say if you want to try to do it, you will be able to. It'll take a little bit of time, but if you've got the time, I think it's great that should do it.
And you'll learn it, and you'll feel good about it.
Yeah, but you don't just plug it in, right?
Well,
I mean, if I just plug it in, will they give me instructions?
Yes, kind of.
Yeah.
Well, nowadays they come with these huge fan foldouts that have pictures. Step one,
step two,
and they're big color. And I think that's where you're going to go with it, Ed. They're huge pictures, and they're very simplified.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, Nan, that's so good that you're getting into this technology.
Good for you.
So proud of you. That's such a great thing, and you're going to enjoy it.
Yep.
And I know for a fact that maybe local libraries will have free classes or seminars where you can go and attend and learn about your computer.
Right.
Okay. My other question is, I want to get a smartphone. Is that the best one to get? I understand there are several.
Man, you rock. Man, you are the coolest grandma I have ever talked to. That is so excellent. So you're going to get a smartphone, too. That's wonderful.
So I think you probably wouldn't go wrong with any of the smartphones. Go into a Best Buy or a Micro Center,
Or she's in Cleveland. I don't think there's a Micro Center.
I was trying to think if they had one down
there. Oh, is there one?
I believe there is.
I think there is. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to figure out. I can't remember where
it is. Or she can go to any of her cell phone stores.
Yeah,
Verizon.
Yeah, there's Verizon. Yeah.
And just
play with them. Yeah.
That's, by the way, how things work nowadays, Nan, is that they want you to play with it. And they love having somebody like yourself come in there and say, teach me. Because there's all sorts of things they can show you. Now, who is your... who provides your phone for you right now? Who gives you your phone service in your house?
Well, I just have my local phone here.
Pardon me?
I have a local phone.
Yep.
Is it AT&T? What is the company that provides your phone service to you?
No, it's just a regular one here in my area.
Okay.
It's not a major one.
So she's going cell phone for the first time, I believe, right?
I gotcha. Because I was going to suggest if you have a regular phone, for other people out there, if you have, like, for instance, if AT&T supplies your phone line, then you could go into one of the AT&T stores and they would help bundle things together for you. That's kind of the way they do that as well. So you got a lot of fun coming for you, Nan.
Yeah, okay. That's what I'll do. I'll study up a little bit and try.
Yep.
I just wondered if I got a computer, can I just get it and plug it in with the wireless?
They'll show you how to do that.
Okay.
Matter of fact, if you get a cable company, the text very often will help you to make that first connection.
And
too.
I would get a laptop if you can.
Yeah, it's a good idea. All right, taking a break. Back for your calls. Before we get back to our exciting call with Dave.
I was just on the phone with him. He said another state trooper's coming up behind him.
Oh, no.
So put him on.
Okay, we got to get him on. Dave, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. He went by.
He went by, okay.
Well, see, in Spain, if you pull over to the side, they ticket you about 150 euros, about $180, $190. If you pull over the side, they take a telephone call.
Oh, wow.
Wow, and, you know, you'd think that they think that would be safer somehow.
Well, here in Troy, you're not allowed to drive with a cell phone plugged into your ear, but you get penalized if you pull over to the side of the road,
too.
That's
interesting. I didn't know that. Where are you, by the way, in terms of the metro?
Okay, I got off at the 2 mile marker from the Ohio state line. I'm going the east side of Ohio.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right. Well, we're glad you're safe.
If anybody's out on 75 headed towards, tell them to slow down. There are state troopers everywhere.
You know, Dave, I just came back from there. My son is playing a lacrosse tournament down in Sandusky this weekend, and I saw him out there too. I should have warned you somehow. You know, there's a new app if you have an iPhone or an Android called Waze. W-A-Z-E.
That's right.
And not that we would recommend that you should ever, you know, download the app. It's free. And then you can see people that go by a state trooper, go by a police officer. They'll mark it, and it uses GPS to tell everybody else in the area where they are. Not that we would recommend that you use W-A-Z-E.
We are very thankful that our state troopers are out there and that because of their presence, people are slowing down.
Yep.
And you certainly
were. And that's really.
And I understand why he stopped to help you to put the sign, but it was great radio, Dave. Okay, now, you were talking about you're trying to get great vinyl discs that you got. You want to save them, you want to turn them into CDs, and you're having some trouble making that jump. The current piece of technology, what is it that you're using? What's it called?
Innovative Technologies.
Innovative Technologies is a company, and this would be one of the devices that they have?
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
And he bought it on the cheap because it was a closeout or whatever.
Yeah.
And what I suggested is that he take the component audio and out and plug it into, you know, some other audio device in his house, like the input of his stereo. Or he could even plug it into the microphone of his computer at home. He'd have to get a converter to convert it from composite, you know, audio out to the, you know, the little eighth of an inch jack, and he could record it on his computer that way just to see if it sounds good. That way he could find out, is it really the needle or is it the software on my laptop? And that's all we're going with this. We're not going to be able to fix this for you, but we could potentially identify, is it the device or is it the software on my computer?
To troubleshoot, that's kind of what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's all we're talking about.
It's helping you do it.
Is there anywhere I can buy a needle if I need to buy a better one?
There are audio stores that that are around that where people, plenty of people still use vinyl. They enjoy the warm sound. You just have to kind of look online for a place, an audio shop near you that would have the needles there. They're kind of hard to come by, obviously, but you'll find better audio shops have them.
It might be specific to that particular model as well.
Yeah. You know, Dave, my concern is this. I think there's different components involved in this. One is you want to get something that makes a good reproduction. In other words, that is a good turntable so that you're getting a good sound out of it. Mm-hmm. Then you want to have something that will take that signal, that sound, and convert it into a digital signal,
yeah,
right?
And a lot of these will convert it to as an MP3 or an audio file on your computer that you can listen to and massage and manipulate the sounds, raise the volume, take out some of the pops before you even record it to a CD.
Right, exactly.
And you want to make sure it sounds good before you record it to a CD. Yeah. And that's where I was going. It's possible that this was made for XP or Vista, and they're just not providing decent software for Windows 7. Or, as you said, it could be the needle. You know, you won't know unless you take your composite output that's on the device and plug it into something like another speaker.
Here.
And then what I was trying to do was to, I had forgotten the name that of the device that he was using. And so I got on the telephone and asked him. And I've been trying to find the review of it. And I found a review of maybe 30, 35 different devices that do the conversion, but I've not found that particular one. So that would be another best practice, would be to go to a number of these, because you never know who's reviewing them, but go to a number of review sites and you start to see the same ones coming up over and over near the top of the list.
So to kind of step back
from there,
you've got different segments of the problem. First one is get something that gives you a good sound on, a good record player, first of all, with a good tone arm and a good diamond needle on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing is you want some audio software or something to convert that sound into digital signals. Shane, anything else?
You know, and we all kind of touched, there's just so many factors involved when it comes to audio and conversion. Yeah. It couldn't, without throwing another one into, I mean, sound card, you know, onboard versus a real sound card. You know, a lot of those devices
You're right, it could be that too.
A lot of those devices will have their own built-in external, really nice external sound card that will handle that, because they know a lot of people's desktops may not have the right sound card. Right. So they'll build it in. They'll build it into the device.
I don't think that's the case with this one.
No, I don't think so. It's just you kind of with this. With what Gary said with the reviews and find one that allows users to also make comments, so that you can read what everyone is saying about it, not just what they say.
Exactly.
You know, so if a device has 15 user reviews, read them all.
So Dave, there's a lot of stuff. I think probably a little more research will help you as well. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, thanks, Dave. For pulling over and asking.
Always make
questions.
Things interesting. I'm out of trouble.
Great radio.
That call only cost $125.
Oh, no, I hope not.
No, Mike, he let him go.
Mike from Westland, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you with your backup situation?
Well, this is my deal here. I have a Vista Ultimate operating system.
Okay.
I use this for business as well as for my personal. Now, the business software, at a point, they installed Windows Server 2008. Now, I used to use Norton Ghost to do my backup. Mm-hmm. Well, Norton Ghost doesn't backup SQL files, so that's where I'm at. I'm looking for Arachnos or one of these softwares. I really can't get any good descriptions of any that will do Windows files as well as server files.
Okay. Windows. Okay.
And I'm wondering whether there's one program that does both, or am I going to have to run two separate backups?
So, are the backups going to be performed while the other files are open?
They can. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you don't want to actually have a shutdown, shut off the applications, perform the backup, start the applications again.
Right. Right.
Okay. So you want them actually open? Yeah. That's the and I'm not familiar with that. Shane, do you have any
I use Novastar is one I use. There's a couple that I'm experimenting with right now, but I can't find any in their directions that tell me, okay, yeah, you can use this one. Here's for server files, SQL files, server files, but it doesn't mention anything about Windows. You have to drop down to do that one. I'm afraid I may have to use two different softwares to achieve what I'm trying to do.
No, I haven't found out. You know, it's the CQL stuff, you know, obviously, like you were saying, Foster, it's running. You know, there's stuff actually running and processing. So when you go to back it up, you know, it may slow, you know, slow your performance down and so forth. Now, how often are you doing a backup?
Well, Arachnos, if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Acronis.
Acronis, they offer it. So does Novastar. Most of them do offer that option on it to where you can it a backup at the same time as you have any open files or anything without any problems with it.
Not that,
and I use both of them right now that I'm experimenting with them right now.
I mean, not that you would really want it to back up. When, you know, let's be realistic. It's a resource hog and it slows your machine up a little bit. I know when I'm running my machine and I notice it's running slow, if I look in the bottom right corner, it's because the backup is running for some reason. You know, so.
Well, and you want it to. If you schedule it at night when you're not working, that's when you want to do it. And I've had good luck with Acronis, but.
Well, I tell you what. Be while I'm running, but I do four backups during the day. I do one in the morning and throughout because it's for my business.
Mike,
so we're always opening and closing as well.
Okay, Mike, we're going to put you on hold right now and see if we can help you as we step off.
Sure.
But there's also the Internet Advisor homepage, our forum as well, is a great place to go with a question like this. It looks like it's going to take people who have more specific information and experience in the area dealing with servers as well.
And we check it often. So
yeah, we check it often. So go to internetadvisor.net and click on the forums to put your questions in there. Thank you very much, Rich Lazinski and Annie. And guys, thank you for being with us. Great program. The podcast of this will be available through iTunes within about 48 hours of this program being done. Thank you so much for joining us on the Internet Advisor, and we will see you next time around the block. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook.
You've been listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. To hear previous podcasts, visit our webpage at internetadvisor.net.